All right, another great episode. This time to close out the week, it's John Karolis, fellow member of the Locked On Podcast family, of course, covering the Boston Celtics, and so much more, though. We discuss his draft night coverage experience, whether or not the Nets surprised him with their decisions at the 27th and 29th overall picks in the first round, if the Nets got enough in the sign-and-trade situation with Spencer Dinwiddie, and then a little bit about the Boston Celtics. Where do they fit into the Eastern Conference hierarchy? Where are the Nets in that food chain? And what to expect as you try to balance the books, bring in talent, extend contracts? It's just a really great conversation for someone who has been tapped into and is so knowledgeable about the NBA. We get into it all right after the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I am Adam Armbrecht, flying solo, of course, this time, as we try to give you an encompassing view around the Brooklyn Nets, the draft, the free agency frenzy or lack thereof, depending on your perspective and where they stand right now, even the East as well. That's why you bring in someone like John Karolis, who is, of course, the host of Locked On Celtics. We've had him on before, talking about a little bit of the rivalry there in the division. And then also the host of Locked On NBA Pods, and did just absolutely phenomenal, man, coverage for the Locked On Network on draft night.
Thank you.
First of all, welcome.
Thanks. Hi. How you doing?
And now more praise. I mean, but really, it was such a fun watch. We ended up getting on together, obviously, but it was just a fun watch. It was such a concise coverage of it with Chad Ford and Rafael Barlow. I turned that on the YouTube channel, and that's what I watched for the entire draft. Like, this was all the information I wanted, and it was more insightful than you get from some other sources sometimes. So it was really fantastic. And just having been able to connect with you prior to that, it just felt like, man, there's John.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I was consider myself very fortunate to be in that position, because everything around me, I was put in a very strong position there. It's like being praised for your assists when you've got Durant and Harden and Kyrie on your side. You're like, wow, you had 10 assists. We're like, yeah, because Kevin Durant made 4 shots and Harden made 5. You know, it's like, yeah, great, thanks. But Chad Ford is amazing. I mean, obviously we know he's a legend. Rafael Barlow is great. I mean, an up and comer on the network, and a guy who's put in a ton of work in the draft. And he was like, we were talking before, we went out to dinner the night before, like, this is it, we're doing this show tomorrow. And he's like, yeah, I was up to 4 in the morning looking at this guy. I'm like, dude, chill out. You know what you're talking about. He's great. And then the staff at WFAA, the reason why we're able to do this, Allie Bronson, who produced, Nick Angstead, who was in there.
Love getting Nick in my ear, by the way, before you go on live, you just get Nick counting you in. I was like, what a familiar voice in my ear, and also very unsettling.
Always. Anything Nick does is very unsettling. Doug Branson, the crew at WFAA. We had a professional, the WFAA is the Dallas station. We had a professional crew, director, everybody back there. So that's what made this whole thing work and look so great. I just got there and be like, okay, you talk. Now you talk. All right, let's go out to Adam. All right, we're done talking to you. Chad, you start talking again. Yes. But it was 6 hours of live TV, and it was so much fun. And when it was over, it's like, oh my God, that's it. Let's grab a handful of Built Bars and I'll see you next year.
that was the last footnote on just the watching was when it finished and you go, 6 hours.
Yeah.
Like there's a world where I just go like, 2.5 hours in, I'm like, all right. Like I'm all good right here. We're like, I'm going to go ahead and take 30. Is that all right? No, sorry. 6 no. more things just happened, and we're going to need you to go ahead and tell us about it.
There's nothing like a little deep vein thrombosis to, get you through. And hey, willing to risk it for the people to get that draft coverage. I'm glad that it went well.
So now that being the case, doing the draft coverage like that perceptually, as opposed to maybe watching it just for the Celtics and maybe thinking more localized in terms of who's going where, were you developing a sense of teams that were having good drafts, teams that were making the right moves? Did it feel different as you were working your way through those picks? I know some selections, though, the big board overall kept to its general structure.
Yeah.
But there was these quick little pivots with some players going a little higher, some guys falling significantly. Were you sitting there in real time thinking, well, that's going to be a problem? Or, you know, okay, there's a steal.
Actually, quite the opposite. Mm. I knew that I had Chad and Raphael sitting there thinking that as I'm talking, I know that they're kind of processing what these picks are. And my job in this whole thing is to basically quarterback the coverage.
Yep.
So while Chad is talking, say, okay, who was the first? Scotty Barnes is a surprise for the Raptors at four. Chad, what do you think? And as he's talking, I've got Allie Bronson, our producer, in my ear saying, okay, here's what's next and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, so Raphael, you know, such and such. And I kind of hear like a third of what's being said, because now I'm in the process of what's next. Who do we have? You know, do we have Sean Woodley? Okay, we got Sean Woodley next. The Thunder, she's saying, it looks like it's Giddey. Okay. All right. So as they're talking, I'm like, okay, Giddey is going to the Thunder. So I, at the end of the night, was like, so who went where again?
What did the Celtics do?
It was 6 hours, because I was so shocked by the end. I'm like, what time is it? Oh my God, we went that long? Because I'm flying. Flying through everything. And, you know, I don't know if it came through on the broadcast, but I got pages of notes in front of me. I got my laptop with messages coming in from the crew. I swear, like, all I know is like, oh, I see Chad Ford going up to walk. So I know we're going to the big board next. So let's go to the big board. Any opportunity I had to talk to them, like, was great. But then I had to like tune out to get to the next thing and coordinate that next bit of coverage. So I had to like go back and review afterwards to say, oh, okay. Yeah. Like I do now look back and they say, oh, okay. I remember that which one was it? The Pelicans taking Zaire Williams, you know, Grizzlies taking Zaire Williams, was like, oh, okay. That one stood out. So it was a wild night.
I just wanted to get, because that general perspective of just everything that goes into that and kind of the frenzy of it, because everything that I'm focusing on is who are the Nets taking? And I had my little moment to talk with you guys there on the show, but it's boy, who got taken here a few ahead of them? Where might the Nets go? Now they made this trade with Shamet and going to the Phoenix Suns. They have this second pick. So from a Brooklyn Nets perspective, I asked this of Raphael Barlow when I had him on as well. Did you anticipate when you saw that, again, that the Nets were going to do something different than what they ultimately did? Because it's not often, I think, that teams that are in championship contention mode often stand pat with late round picks. It tends to be one of two things. Can we move this for something else like they did the year prior, getting Shamet? Or can we get more assets down the road because nothing in the immediate is going to have real value for what we're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I didn't think the Nets were going to make any sort of investment in youth, but they picked up a couple of guys that may actually be somewhat helpful. It's funny because, these teams that are built like the Nets, right? You've made your big investment in the stars, and now it's just a big scramble. How do we fill in the blanks around these stars? For them to value the draft as much as they seem to have is a little bit surprising to me, because of where Durant and Harden and Kyrie are in their stages, right? Like, it's for me, if I'm looking at, well, let's just use the Celtics, the team that I cover, for example, it makes a little more sense for a team like the Celtics, because you're two stars. And if they get a third one, it's presumably going to be somebody in his 20s in that timeline. Mm-hmm. You say, all right, you can let 23-year-old Jason Tatum kind of take a couple of years and figure himself out as the main guy. And, you know, if you draft Cam Thomas, you know, you can say, all right, here's a guy that's going to come in behind him and we can work with them. They can take a couple of years to develop together and grow into that championship, potentially core. Now the Nets seem to be like, yeah, Cam Thomas, let's see what he can do off the bench. Let's see what De'Ron Sharpe can do off the bench. Let's see, you know, what we can get out of these guys. So they're looking at this draft as potentially cheap contributors that you think, hey, normally rookies kind of suck, but let's see what playing next to KD, Harden, and Kyrie does for a guy like Cam Thomas, who is such a, you know, known as a scorer that, hey, when he gets the ball, let's see if he can get take advantage of some of that open space.
Yeah, and I want to pick up on that piece of where the Nets could or should have gone, perceptions around that. But first, got to tell everybody about betonline.ag. It's, of course, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you know you can track all of the MLB action right over on Bet Online. Get the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including that MLB season, the NBA and NHL when they ramp back up, and UFC and MMA too. Before the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get in on the game as teams continue those deep playoff runs and championship aspirations. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts, promo code LOCKEDON. And so the other thing that it really makes me wonder as well is coming out of this, the draft and the free agency from a Brooklyn Nets perspective was expectations about what they were going to do. Doug and I have pushed back consistently around this narrative of, well, Joseph Tsai has a ton of money. They're already in the luxury tax, so who cares? When they were speculated around, could you keep Spencer Dinwiddie? Well, signing him to about $20 million a year was going to cost you $87 million. That was the ratio of how it inflated the luxury tax on a signing like that. And that sense of, well, who cares? It's just, you know, it's just somebody else's money. We should do it. You're in win a championship mode. There's that element of it, which I think is a false narrative to just say, well, just because there's a billionaire out there doesn't mean he doesn't care about money and how it gets spent. Then it's the combination of what are the expectations of free agency? Where are you getting a sense from agents and players about where they may want to go? Who's achievable for you there? And then what is that drop off or the give and take between a young draft prospect and what his impact could be versus going out into the market and getting player X, right? So when we look at the Nets and we see Patty Mills, bang, that's a fantastic veteran signing. He great still sign. Has a lot to give. James Johnson. Okay. That's a, let's see what we get here. Maybe there's some defensive upside, you know, whatever, sure. But yeah. All these mechanisms are happening at the same time. You can, you know, give your take on the Nets side of it or filter it through Boston and how there are multiple layers to this 1 month process that you can't get the judgment and answer in the moment. It takes time.
Yeah. So there's a few things here. One, billionaires don't become billionaires by spending money, you know, wantonly. So as much as they, you know, Joe Tsai has a ton of money. Okay. Yeah. He still doesn't want to just throw it all away. Now, that said, these owners are driven by the championships. And so by winning a championship, you get to keep, you know, a lot of that playoff gate and all of that stuff. So that this is the time where they generally are more willing to spend. But you brought up the point that the way the luxury tax is set up, it gets very prohibitive. And this is a thing that I think fans really need to understand is the collective bargaining agreement is built to break up teams like this. That teams like this don't come along as often as they used to. And when they do, it gets super expensive very quickly. There's a progressive tax that starts at $1.50 per every dollar that you're over for the first $5 million, and then it goes up. You know, the next $5 million is $1.75. The next million is like $2.25. And then it goes. So, and then there's the repeater tax that's going to be coming up. And once that kicks in, then watch out. Now, Brooklyn is in a better position to handle that. They own the building. So whatever revenues come in, concerts come through, wrestling comes through, they get to keep, you know, money made from that. So that helps in terms of paying the luxury tax. But at some point, it still costs a lot. And all of these guys, this upcoming season, are on after the season, they have player options.
Yep.
And so if they all exercise those player options, great. If they don't, then it's everybody's going to opt out and say, hey, cash in, time for me to cash in. And that's going to be very difficult. Harden can cash in because you traded for him. You got his bird rights. KD and Kyrie are under a different structure. So I don't know how that contract's going to work out. But the whole thing is that it still gets expensive. And there are limited options for you to use for signing somebody. You can't use the full mid-level exception because that'll hard cap you. And the Nets just can't be hard capped. I think they might even be over the hard cap line anyway. So that gives you $5.9 million to spend. So great. That gets you Patty Mills. That's basically all I can get you. The fact that they got an exception out of Spencer Dinwiddie is huge because now they could be players at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And you can make a move at the deadline for somebody that ends up, you end up having to mortgage more of the future, but the hell with that. You know, you give up second round picks or even a first round pick to get somebody that fits into that traded player exception. Now you get yourself a player that you could not have signed. So I think what they did with Dinwiddie was actually really smart because you weren't going to get back the type of player that Dinwiddie was in that deal. So you take that TPE, which is what, 18 million? Now you have 18 million in cash to spend in a trade that who knows who's going to be available at the deadline. Now you have a regular season. You've got three stars. You figure out where your deficiencies are with what you have now. You figure out you had some coaching departures. Ime Udoka came over to the Boston Celtics. Mike D'Antoni's gone. Figure out how the coaching fits into all of this. Go into the season knowing that the Nets are going to be a top, at least worst 2-3 seed, you know, even if they coast a little bit. Figure it out. Then at the trade deadline, after December, you start to target who might be disgruntled out there. Who might be out there? You say, okay, this guy makes $10 million. That guy makes $6 million. They both now fit into that TPE. You can make two deals to get useful players. Take a little bit of time to see who that useful player is. Now you've got a mechanism to get that useful player that didn't exist when you were over the cap and just no money to spend. So I think all things considered, the Dinwiddie move for a guy that was leaving anyway, getting that is a pretty shrewd move.
And as you and I, we talked before we got on, I had a little bit of a vent on this topic last week with Doug, but it was that sense of, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, but, you know, the Wizards couldn't take on that contract. So the Nets had more leverage there potentially to hold them hostage over it. And it's yes, but right. And at the end of the day, just to skip past that, go listen to that episode if you want to hear me go off. I like getting an outside perspective that kind of affirms the sense of take the second round pick you got for him. You get a swap rights there with Golden State and Washington as well. Take the exception that you get and then wait and see, because it's the exact same process they went through last year. Now, what they ended up with based on how they were structured was buyout market guys like a Blake Griffin, right? You took a shot on LaMarcus Aldridge. He ended up retiring due to health concerns, but that's where you were living. So to me, it just felt like, to your point of, you are held prisoner in the most positive of ways to these superstars when you form this team because of the expense of them. But it very much plays itself out in the same timeline of, let's see how the league looks. What teams made moves and pushed and have rosters that want to try to surge in the playoffs? But if it doesn't look so good for them at the deadline, suddenly they become sellers. Suddenly resetting for next draft class becomes an option for them. And the Nets are going to be one of those teams that gets to strike relative to other contenders. We saw what the Lakers did, right? They did a lot of their legwork here, moving off the guys they didn't want, bringing in all the pieces they do want. They may still be in the market to add somebody potentially, but it feels like they wanted to check their boxes early. Whereas the Nets are very much in a position to check their boxes later because their three superstars are still at the peak pinnacle of their prime. Whereas I think the Lakers are in a little bit more of a, hey, with where LeBron is and this team, we need to know with right. as close to certainty as possible that when we step on the court for game one this year, we are in the finals. We are in a deep run. We're trying to get this chip.
So to correct myself, it looks like it's an $11.5 million.
I apologize. Yes, I was good. Yes.
That's that. So I just want to make sure I'm clear on that. But here's the important part. You're getting second round picks in return for that. Now, those are the picks that you can turn around and flip that get you that player. So I think that Brooklyn is in actually a pretty good position. Again, when you're a team that spending money the way they're spending money. You got to get creative. And this was a creative way. Look, I'm not going to question what Brooklyn's front office does. They've done a spectacular job in the asset acquisition form of this, flipping those into the cap space necessary, understanding the market that they were going to get Kyrie and he was going to bring Durant, and still having enough to go over there and get James Harden. They had two paths that they could have gone, and they did that. Sean Marks has been, I think, brilliant throughout this whole thing. I say this as a Celtics, you know, a guy that's covering the Celtics and caters to Celtics fans, that it's like, you know, I'd like for Brooklyn to screw up here and have a misstep. Right. And they haven't, they've gotten some young players in the draft that could potentially be tradable if need be. They've got young talent. Now you've got some of these extra little second round picks. It's funny. We treat second round picks like we talk out of both sides of our mouths with the second round picks, because it's like, ah, oh, it's only a second rounder, but then you need the second rounder to make these sign and trades work. You need the second rounders to attach to a TPE to get the player that you want. Second rounders, every draft, some second rounder turns into like, oh, wow, I can't believe he slipped to the second round. This guy's actually going to be a pretty good player, or at least a rotational player in the NBA. So we're like, oh, these are important, but also they're disposable. We'll just buy another one. Like, right. It's kind of wild. I'm impressed with where the Nets are. My only question with the Nets is, you know, I was watching the Team USA game against Australia thinking like, wow, Kevin Durant is just godlike out there. Oh, he's playing 30 minutes. I wonder how Nets fans feel about him playing 30 minutes and Team USA absolutely needing him to play those 30 minutes so they can win. I think that the Nets might be in for a slower start because it behooves them to just bring KD back a little slowly. Maybe you don't play him on some back-to-backs early. Don't worry about your seeding right away, because you're going to probably make a run later on. And it doesn't matter what seed that Brooklyn is in. It's like you brought up the Lakers. The Lakers, I think they're gunning for like the sixth seed at this point, because with their, you know, group of 80-year-olds, you got to let them kind of like chill out for the whole season. And hopefully they can come together enough at the end. Like, I can see the Lakers being in like seventh or eighth with 2 weeks to go in the regular season, playing everybody a little bit more, ramping them up, going on like a 6 or 7 game winning streak to go head into the playoffs, grabbing that sixth seed and people saying, oh crap, we don't want to play them. So I can see the Nets kind of going in a similar direction where, you know, you had a long playoff run, guys were hurt. KD's playing now in the Olympics. Let's just kind of chill out. Let's give Thomas a little bit of time to go out there and do your thing, score your buckets, and see what you get. See what Dayron can do as a big and see what he's got there. So I think the Nets are in a good position, and I would caution Nets fans that don't take November, December as any sign of anything.
Right.
Just understand what's happening. Understand that you've got weapons to use in the arsenal. Sean Marks has got things in his back pocket that he's going to use at the deadline. And that once you get past like January, that's when the Nets, I think it's time. It's going to be time for the East to feast on Brooklyn early and then wait for Brooklyn to make their run later.
Well, and if those teams are planning on feasting on Brooklyn early, they better also be feasting on a Built Bar from Built.com. You know that Built Bar has so many delicious flavors. If you're unaware, coconut, cherry, barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. Just to give you a sample of what you could be having right now, my favorite is orange. That's right. I like that little bit of citrus there. It's not cardboardy. It's not like all those other protein bars out there on the market. And how about the fact that there's 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. It's amazing flavors, all tasty, and all healthy for you. Order today and you can get the grasshopper cookie or raspberry, whatever your favorite flavor is. Get some orange and send it my way. Built Bar is the official protein bar of U.S. track and field team. That's right. They supported Team USA during these past Olympics in Tokyo. And of course, if you head over to built.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at built.com.
So in that regard, we'll get you out the door on this, because when speaking with Barlow, he was saying the East is going to look different, right? More competitive. Certainly teams made big pushes, and we'll include Boston in this just in terms of where some of these teams are in the hierarchy. And it did make it interesting in the sense of how much, quote, in-season resting will top teams like the Nets be able to do? How concerned are they with the seeding or home court, et cetera? Just when you look at the East overall, when you look at the Boston Celtics and obviously some changes in the front office, changes at head coach, are they, and certain teams like the Toronto Raptors as well, are there teams that are falling back a little bit and a couple teams that are rising where overall the East is more competitive collectively and we don't really know what this hierarchy is maybe after the Bucks and the Nets.
Right. Well, as far as the Celtics go, I think that the Celtics, this is going to be a bridge year for the Boston Celtics. They have
Tatum. Okay. Is everything okay with Tatum? This is a total outside perspective thing. Is Tatum happy and comfortable there in Boston? Cause I just, he's a superstar to me in my eyes. And I worry that the Bradley Beal Washington Wizards handful of years is getting closer than Boston Celtics fans maybe want to realize with Tatum.
So that there's certainly a, you know, a twinge of that, that people are feeling here. I think he's fine right now. He's going into the first year of his contract extension next season. So he's still a young guy. And I think he's surveying the league. It's really interesting because I just wrote a piece on Boston Sports Journal about how Tatum's time in Tokyo is going to be kind of transformative for him from a business perspective, because first of all, because of COVID, they can go nowhere. They can watch basketball games. They can go to the arena and that's about it. So who does he have out there? He's got Durant to talk to, who was in OKC, made his decisions to move a couple of times, created super teams a couple of times. He's got Damian Lillard, who, like his good friend Bradley Beal, has been super, super loyal. But now we see the rumblings with Damian Lillard. He can ask Dame, like, hey, what took you so long? Why are you doing this now? Why are you thinking about this now? He's got newly minted champions and Chris Middleton, you know, to especially Middleton, because Milwaukee didn't make, you know, their run. And they had a couple of false starts.
Yeah.
Let's say. So
to put it kindly.
Yeah. So he's got superstars to talk to. He's got guys who play with superstars to talk to. I'm really curious as to how Tatum's perspective on the business of the NBA is going to be shaped by all of the guys that he can talk to over the course of this tournament. Now, the Celtics have tried to bring in other stars. Starts with Gordon Hayward, and that Gordon Hayward injury really is what started this whole kind of fall to what we're calling a bridge year here. If he never got hurt, who knows what would have happened, because Kyrie would have been there with a healthy Gordon Hayward. Who knows how good that would have gone?
Yeah.
You got Tatum as a rookie, Brown as a second year player. Horford's there and in his, you know, at the tail end of his prime playing well. I'm not saying they would have won a championship, but damn, they would have been contenders. So the Hayward injury has a 2-year ripple effect on the Celtics. The second year was really bad. Kyrie ends up deciding to leave. Other personal issues, you know, help fuel that, but that also led to Terry Rozier being a malcontent in the locker room and making that locker room kind of toxic. So that blew up. They bring in Kemba Walker as a pivot, then his knee goes bad. And so that whole thing has not worked for the Celtics. Horford, Hayward, Isaiah Thomas was there already in the middle of it, and he ended up going. Kyrie, Kemba, all of those moves just did not work for various reasons. And so now Brad Stevens takes over as president of basketball operations, and he says, I've got to clean up this mess. So out goes Kemba. You give up a first round pick for that. They're signing nothing but one-year deals. They're not really players in the free agency market. Even the guys that they traded for, Josh Richardson, has 1 year left on his contract. It's very obvious that they're putting together a team that's temporary, and they're relying on Tatum and Brown and Ime Udoka. And the one thing that I can say is that Tatum and Brown have both been very vocal about getting black head coaches into the league. They now have another one in the mix. And we know once you're a head coach, once you're in the mix, you're in the mix. You're going to be in there for a while. They're not going to let Ime Udoka fail. They're not going to be the reasons why he doesn't succeed. So I think Brad Stevens is saying, all right, we got this new coach. We got these guys who are going to be all in for him. They're going to work their asses off for him. Let's just kind of, you guys just do this for a year. And then next year we're going to have max cap space, presumably going after Bradley Beal. However they do it, try to sign him, sign and trade, whatever it is. And then they can get into the mix. Now they ascend to the challengers to Brooklyn. They right. now have their three stars. They're younger. They can take on and say, hey, we can defend better than Brooklyn does. Hopefully by then, Durant has come back down to earth a little bit. And the other guys, who knows what happens with Kyrie. So that's the overall plan with the Boston Celtics. So where do they sit? I think a best case scenario, a fourth seed, fighting for that fourth seed. I think the top of the East is still Brooklyn. Milwaukee got to give the reigning champs their respect. Philly is kind of a weird place, but I'm going to keep them in their number three spot because they've got Joel Embiid, and I'm going to assume that they'll figure something out because they've got good power structure there. But look, Atlanta is an interesting case. I don't believe – I think Atlanta's due for going to take a little step back because there's so much that went their way.
Right, and almost overachieved a little bit. So a now little, a small like step back is actually – will feel like a big failing if they were – to get knocked right. out in the first round or something.
Collins got his money. How motivated is he going to be? They're taking away those exaggerated movement fouls that Trae Young loves to use, and he lives on the line because of those things. Those are going away. I'm kind of curious to see how he's going to play there. So Atlanta, got to give them their respect. They're going to be in that mix after the third, you know, I'll say after Philly, but they'll be in that mix. The Knicks are super interesting. They're going to be in that mix. Miami got Kyle Lowry. They're probably at the top of that mix. And hey, look, the Chicago Bulls are interesting. The Charlotte Hornets got interesting. The 1-8, even maybe the 1-play-in, is going to be
much more attractive in the East than it has been in a long time.
It's going to be much more even than we thought. I don't think we're going to have that conversation of, well, the eighth seed in the West would be the third seed in the East. Right. I think the East has a lot of strong teams now.
Just last really quick footnote after all of the great conversation we've had at this point, there have been a very brief speculation around Spencer Dinwiddie maybe being an option for Boston in a sided trade scenario. The speculation that maybe Marcus Smart would have been a player getting sent back from a Nets perspective. I loved it. I thought, you know, this is a bulldog kind of guy you want there in the backcourt providing depth. Like I love Marcus Smart, love everything that he's about. Would you have signed off on that? Would that have made sense for Boston? It doesn't have to be, the myriad of details you could probably give me from inside Boston land, but just would that have made sense?
I don't know that I would have wanted Dinwiddie in that scenario, just coming off of the ACL. And also
right, one more guard with injury concerns.
Right. Sorry. Right. For once, I want the Celtics to get a 6'5 guard that's healthy. That's sure. it. That's all. He's either been small or broken. So I'd like somebody that's tall and not broken, please. I think it's one thing that we should expect this season is a lot of Marcus Smart talk. Depending on how the Celtics are going to pursue Bradley Beal. I keep saying Bradley Beal because he's the most obvious choice. They've got max cap space. He's going to be the one guy that's probably going to move. Tatum and Beal are like best friends. You know, Beal was like his big brother in St. Louis. They're both from St. Louis. So it makes absolute perfect sense. So I just say Bradley Beal as if it's fact. Their pursuit of Bradley Beal is going to be what determines how they keep, if they keep Marcus Smart. Mm. If they can work it out where they operate as an over-the-cap team and sign and trade for Bradley Beal and say, we'd rather have the hard cap and work that way and still be able to keep Smart and maybe Robert Williams or at least one of the two, then we'll see which way they go. If they say we have to be prepared to sign Beal with cap space, then it's almost guaranteed that Marcus Smart's going to go, because if you're going to keep one of him, and Robert Williams is up for an extension, he's not going to get it. So he'll be up for a new contract next year. His cap hold is smaller. He's young. In the league is full of point guards. The league does not have a lot of players like Robert Williams, who not only is an elite rim runner, but is a hell of a passer. And I think fits perfectly on this team. So I would not be surprised to hear Marcus Smart trade talk. And I would not be surprised if he's actively shopped and could be a guy that a team gets at the deadline. I don't think the Nets are going to get him. I don't think the Celtics are going to want to have a pissed off Marcus Smart in their division. I think they're going to want to send him. If any team is looking for a Seattle expansion team right away, it'll be the Celtics, so they can send him there. It's as far as they could possibly go.
And in all of this, some of the dreams are always, yeah, but where's he going to be? Is this going to be a problem for us if we send him to Team X, to potentially the Brooklyn Nets? In all of this conversation, though, the bottom line is you can tell it's about what's happening right now in this moment with the draft, with free agency, with the pursuit of a championship today. And then what is it going to look like next year? How are we going to move money? How are we going to surround our superstars with talent? So there is always this ebb and flow, I think, to the NBA and to sports in general that does become fascinating. And it's one of the reasons why getting on someone like John Karolis makes it really helpful, because he has more insight than I am capable of absorbing and redistributing to the people in a concise manner that allows everyone to kind of get some more insight behind the basketball game beyond the court. That being the case, I forgot to mention Boston Sports Journal as well as one of the many, many jobs that this guy is carrying the bag for. Locked on Celtics, Locked on NBA pods as well. Anything else that people should keep an eye out from you, John, before we let you go?
No. I've exhausted my...
Don't look at me for anything. I need a day off.
I've exhausted my mental energy. I'm ready for a vacation. Team USA is wrapping up. I'll be writing about that. But still going 5 days a week on Locked On Celtics. Still going on Wednesdays on Locked On NBA. So if you are so inclined, I'd like to think I keep it somewhat rational. So if you want somewhat rational Celtics knowledge and general NBA knowledge, I hope that you stick around.
Somewhat rational? John Karolis, we appreciate your time. We'll catch up with you again soon, man.
See you, man. Thanks.